Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Foljam. This is The Sandman, Issue 55, World's End, Cerements. So let's start off with the cover. This is another one done with a Macintosh. Photography, collage, and Macintosh. And this is from Dust Covers. Neil notes about this. I think it was the discovery that he could make gravestones join onto skulls that sold Dave on the whole computer thing.
It is magic.
It's, early Photoshop of being able to easily meld between two things. It's so much easier now than it was back when this was released. Which was, the cover date was November of 1993, and the in-store date was September 21st, 1993. Credits are writer, of course, Neil Gaiman, cover by Dave McKean, as they all are. The penciler of the framing story is Brian Talbot, and the inker is Mark Buckingham. And the penciler for the internal stories is Shay Anton Pensa, inker is Vincent Locke, letterer Todd Klein, colorist Daniel Vazo, editor Karen Berger, and associate editor Shelley Bond. And yeah, we have a rib cage and a heart and the skull and the gravestone at the top. Definitely about the Necropolis Litharge. Or its people. Well, let's get to the inside. We're back with Brandt, who comes downstairs and uses what is now kind of seen as a slur to describe the Asian gentleman.
Yeah, don't use that word, dude.
So the early 90s when this came out, I think that was becoming kind of knowledge that we use the term Oriental for objects, and it's okay, but you don't use it for people.
Mm-hmm.
He says hello to Klaproth, finds out there's no honorifics.
He's looking pretty worse for wear, too. He's got that coffee stain on his shirt now.
Yeah.
Band-aid on his face. He's like one haircut away from Tank Girl at this point.
From Tank Girl?
Yeah, she wears band-aids all over her face and stained clothing. I mean, he's just got to lose a little more clothing and then get a haircut.
And turn into a girl.
Well, you know.
Or an anthropomorphic kangaroo.
Yeah, sure.
And there is lightning. And he counts the time between the lightning and the thunder. The general rule for that is it's about 1 mile for every 5 seconds elapsed between the flash and the thunderclap.
Okay, but under the Badoom.
Yeah.
Why is there a whole bunch of Slimers drinking wine?
I don't know. There's just some more people that are waiting out the storm.
All of them Slimer from the Ghostbusters.
I have a feeling that they have legs, but yeah, you could be right. You could be right. It could be multiple Slimers. Maybe those are all the ghosts.
Slimers babies.
Or Slimers babies.
Slimers running around all over town and his offspring all end up in this in-between place.
Yeah.
The Ghostbusters can't lock them up because they feel bad because they're just kids.
Yeah, kid ghosts.
Yeah.
And over the next page, Petrifax volunteers to tell his story and checks with his master.
Mm-hmm.
Who is truly his master, we find it. It's not just an honorific like Mr. He's actually a journeyman working under Klaproth.
Mm-hmm. Petrifax is quite the dashing figure.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a handsome looking pale guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's less pale in his flashback, though.
Oh, you're right.
I think they get more pale over time.
I think you could be correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or as they learn, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something going on with that. Yeah, that's right. He does have a little, just some highlights of flesh color on the next page and the following ones in the story.
Mm.
I hadn't noticed that. So he's a bit of a daydreamer at school. He's at burial school, and he's got to learn all the burial stuff.
Yes, I think we've all fallen asleep during a lecture before.
I haven't fallen asleep, but I would certainly daydream. I was certainly the type of person who would get bored with what I was hearing, especially if it was one of those teachers who insisted on just telling you the thing that they had assigned as the reading the night before. So for homework, read these chapters, and then in the next class, okay, let's go over those chapters you read, and they would just like basically sum them up. That taught me you don't have to read those chapters. It was a very bad lesson.
Unless they call on you in class like they do with Petrifax.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets called.
He's done the reading.
He has done the reading. He is a good student, which is partly, I think, why he's daydreaming. he goes through the different types of burial. These are all true, and they vary around the world. Also, the name Petrifax comes from Latin, and it either means one who turns things into stone or else things made of stone. The word Kyriel is from the Greek Kyri, meaning Lord, and Eucrasia is another obsolete medical term for good health, and it derives from the Greek eu, meaning good, and either crasis, mixture, or crassi, temperature. So we've got some excellent names here.
Eucrasia, we see her on the previous page in the inn. She does not look the picture of health.
No.
So earth burial or interment, disposal through fire, mummification, disposal through water, and air burial.
Mm-hmm. He almost forgets that one and then looks out the window where he was daydreaming and sees birds.
It is the one that's like, would probably be the least known for those of us in like our kind of Western culture here.
Yeah. Yeah. The air burial is practiced in Tibet,
mm-hmm.
including, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves, where you eat and actually have bits of them on your hands. Yeah.
Mm. I know that Zoroastrians do sky burial.
Oh, okay.
For sure, as well. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'd have to look that up. Feel like I'm right.
Comparable practices are part of Zoroastrian burial practices where deceased are exposed to the elements and birds of prey on stone structures called dakma.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I used to watch this great YouTube channel. It's pretty popular, called Ask a Mortician. And that's where I learned about that, about sky burials.
Yeah, Wikipedia actually has an interesting page on sky burials, including some photographs.
Ooh.
Of a guy getting cut up for the birds.
I wouldn't mind that kind of. I wouldn't mind to go that way.
I'm dead. Once I'm gone, I don't care. I think I would rather it be used for more good than feeding animals. I would rather, you know, I'm an organ donor for sure. And then the rest can go to science.
Okay. But like, there's also, I mean, it's not a negative thing to feed birds of prey.
No, it's just not as much positive as I'd like.
Sure, but what if science was done with you? Then when?
Yeah, okay. Once science learns everything, then you can feed me to the birds.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's horrible to get fed to the birds. It's just while I'm alive, that's what I want. I want when I'm dead, I just want my body to be used to help people. I value people more than birds.
Sure, but you're overlooking the very real fact that these birds might be scientists.
If you find bird scientists, you might have to change what I want to do. I will allow that.
I want my body to be fed to scientists.
Right?
Yeah, they forgot about cannibalism. The last kind of burial.
I don't know if that's... Yeah. Yeah.
The sixth kind, the secret forbidden sixth the kind forbidden of burial. Sixth burial.
Soup.
Soylent Green.
Yeah. Ugh. So Klaproth sends Petrifax off to see a sky burial.
Mm-hmm.
His redheaded friend here says, oh, you won't be coming down to the vaults. He's like, no, I got to go. And he finds out he's only got an hour to get there, and it's at the foot of the nearby mountains, so he has to run the whole way. And he does. He makes it there. Barely. The master that's there seems a little nicer than Klaproth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I like this. Like, it seems like Petrifax is like, oh, God, another master. I'd better apologize profusely for being late. And he's just going to treat me like crap, like Klaproth does all the time. And he's like, all right, take your time. Catch your breath. It's not going to make any difference to the client.
Yeah.
Like, he's way more chill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still professional, but just more chill.
And so these dudes have a lot more work to do in the sky burial than I ever thought was a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Wherein they gotta chop him up real good.
Yeah.
They gotta expose all the bits, and then later they gotta grind his bones up.
Yeah, so that there's nothing left at all.
This is a very graphic chapter.
It really, really is, yeah.
Yeah. Just thought I would warn you when it's already too late.
And we also find out that the people of Necropolis Litharge wear the clothes of their clients after they're passed.
Yes.
They take all their clothes off and then they get to have them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they're wearing all these raggedy, beat up clothes all the time. Because they don't get new ones.
And yet very formal.
Well, because when you get buried in your best.
Yeah.
It's just your old best. So the details they give here of taking off the clothes and cutting them up, this is all pretty much in alignment with the Tibetan sky burial.
Yeah.
It doesn't always involve the storytelling that they do at the end.
Yes.
And we learn three things are left. First, their pride in a task done well and honestly and with reverence, and also their memories of the departure and disposal, which they in turn will take to their grave. And the third thing is the stain, but the next rain will wash that away.
And their final ceremony is to hang out and eat with their dirty hands.
Yeah.
And talk about stuff.
Yeah, this is interesting, but this is exactly the kind of tradition that can get a culture totally wiped out by disease.
True.
Hey, let's eat this guy who just died. Like, eat with bits of this guy who just died on us. That's dangerous.
We totally cut up and handle his bowels, but no worries. It's not as if cholera is a thing.
Right.
That could strike you at any moment.
I'm just going to say the Necropolis Lethargy probably has really cool techniques they don't talk about for dealing with that.
They probably just don't get sick from the dead.
Yeah.
These guys seem like they're probably, that's not a problem for them.
Yeah. Yeah. They're experts in this. Like, it really, it's this whole culture built around this, and every one of them takes it super seriously and is like the world's best at it. Like, that's what we're getting through these stories, that mm-hmm. is that they know everything. They make sure to train everybody in the next generation, and that keeps them going. And we'll hear a story about why that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we go to now. We start to tell stories.
When the apprentice named Mig tells the first story.
Yeah, about a hangman.
Mm. A reluctant hangman. Well, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. Well, so the story goes, we'll sum it up, that people tend to be reluctant hangmen because everybody hates you when you're the hangman because they're worried that you might end up wanting to hang them.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to do it. In big towns, it's not a problem because, you know, there's enough money to be offered from the taxes that it's worth it. But in small towns where everybody knows you and then everybody would hate you, most people don't. So what they do instead is offer somebody who is convicted of a crime to be hung to become the hangman until just before they die, and then they get hung.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the tale of Billy Scutt.
So Billy Scutt, who was originally a grave robber, becomes a hangman.
Yeah.
But he becomes the best hangman.
Yeah. Yeah, took pride in it. And this is, I like that the story that the people who take pride in burying people tell is about a hangman who takes pride in what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very much respecting professionalism. And the general story is that as he's very, very old and ill, he faked out that he wasn't quite dead so that he could die in his bed instead of being hung.
I just realized something.
What's that?
The three stories mm-hmm. are the three things you get to take away from a sky burial. The first one, Billy Scutt keeps his pride.
Yeah.
And the second story, let's see how the second story goes.
Okay.
Let's see if I'm right about this.
Okay. So Billy Scutt gets to keep his pride.
Yeah, because he dies in his bed, so he keeps his pride. He never gets hung. He takes pride in being a hangman, and he beats them by never getting hung.
Right. And let's note that we're now inception level of story level two.
Yes.
Because we're in the world's end being told a story about when Petrifax was an apprentice, and now the story that he's in has them telling this story. So mm-hmm. it's a story within a story.
Yes.
And there's almost one more level of story already because we're reading the story of the world's end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know the name of the other guy who tells the story.
Skroil.
Skroil.
Because Mig says, who's next, Skroil, Master Hermes? You, lad. And you, lad, is Petrifax. And Master Hermes is the master.
Hmm.
So Skroil takes the next telling.
So we find out that he gets brought to the necropolis with his father's body, apparently because mm-hmm. his father traded him for it, sold him.
Yeah, promised him, I will give you my son in order for you to bury me well.
Wow. Dick move.
It's not I'll give you my son into slavery, it's you will take my son and teach him this excellent job, right? If we're dealing with this as being back in kind of olden times, being taken on as an apprentice and being taught something that was a valuable skill was actually a really good thing for people. Now, granted, you didn't get a choice in it.
Yeah.
but what kids do these days, really, at age of 8. Shut up. Go to school, Scroyle. Learn your mathematics.
So he was a youngin' when he arrived.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 9 years. He's done a bunch of the things apprentices do, like sneaking into the catacombs and having sex on mm-hmm. some skulls. And
remember our redheaded friend early on? Aren't you coming down to the catacombs with us, Petrifax? Nah, I gotta go do this thing.
And tying a dead man's toes together with a piece of string.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's chilling out being a good apprentice dude. And who happens to walk by?
Mr. Bindleman.
Mr. Bindleman. Destructo.
Yeah, destruction.
Brother Destructo.
Destruction notes that he has been here before and that it hasn't changed much since the last time he was there.
Mm.
And Squirrel says, oh, the Necropolis Litharge does not change. And Destruction, who is all about change, right? Mm. That's Destruction's thing is change, says, oh, everything's mutable. This isn't the first Necropolis, you know. And he tells a story about basically destruction, even though he's not the one who did it.
Back in the old days, the last time Necropolis was around, or the last time Destruction was around the Necropolis, all the Undertakers had become, like, bad at their jobs, or mostly they'd stopped caring. They dropped all the ceremonies, and they had let it kind of fall to rot. They let bodies just, you know, clog up the water and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day, all of the Endless showed up.
Yep.
And they said, our sister is dead.
Now, do you remember who that is?
The one who dies?
Yeah.
It was Delight, right? She dies and comes back as... Oh.
Delight changed into Delirium.
Okay, who
Despair
died?
Is not the first Despair.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So this is the story of when Despair died.
Mm.
Our sister is dead, they said. And the Necropolitans were like, where's the body? Where's the offering? You know, all right, give us the body. Give us your money. And they're like, we need the cerements and the books of ritual, which are in your keeping. And they're like, ha, whatever. And we finally get Destiny doing a thing.
Because
mostly he's like, I'm Destiny. I can't do anything. All I can do is, hey, you're here. And this is how it's supposed to work. And instead, this seems to be his like big Destiny power. This is no true Necropolis, he told them. Your charter is revoked. This is no longer a city. It is over. It is ended. And that was it. It becomes just dust and a little bit of a rock left.
Mm-hmm.
And the village of Litharge was given a charter proclaiming it to be a necropolis. And that's how your city came to be.
Mm. So you're left with the memories of a job well done. That's the second.
Yeah.
Our memories of his departure and disposal, which we in turn will take to the grave. So all the people who lived in the Necropolis beforehand took all the memories of what they had done, which was a bad job,
and
their grave.
Their name is not even known anymore because they didn't do it reverently.
So they lost their memories, the memories of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of the pride too, right? Like this is why they take pride in their job.
Mm-hmm.
This is why they do it right. This is why they obey the ritual. It's why they tell the stories, why they eat with their hands with little bits of the people on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because to not do it is to invite destruction.
Mm. Also, he whistles a song of his own composition. And the reason why he knows it was his own composition, it was Destruction's composition, is because Destruction told him.
Yeah.
Of course, he wouldn't be able to avoid doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to whistle the song. I wrote it myself.
Petrifax asks, is that how Litharge was founded? And Master Hermes says that's a poser, the Sith Kundman, which is an ancient term for... Sith Kundman is an old term for a leader of a parish or something like that. I can't find the exact definition of it. It's like leader of a parish or leader of 100 head of men or something like that.
Okay.
He once told me that the written history of Litharge goes back over 80,000 years, but both could be true.
Yeah.
That Despair died 80,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was just after that the Necropolis Litharge showed up.
Yeah.
Also, of course, how do you end Despair's life in a perfect way when her family goes to pay their last respects? Of course. it goes to hell mm-hmm. and doesn't get done right and is insultingly bad.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it did.
Right? Like
so they wrecked it.
But that's just how despair, like their life is supposed to end. Like there shouldn't be any kind of, it should be the worst kind of funeral, which is one that's done without respect by crappy people. And so you have to wreck their whole town.
Yeah.
Great.
Perfect.
Yeah. So he doesn't know if it's true,
mm-hmm.
but it puts him in mind of a story he heard when he was a small child.
Mm. Of his own master.
Hmm. Mistress Veltis. And you'll notice in these flashbacks of her, she's got that withered right hand. We yes. know why. Except in the picture of her dying.
Mm.
So in both of those, they get that right. Where he says she's dead now.
She was super talented. And she told this story within this story within the story. I don't know how many stories deep we are. She told this story to her apprentices. Mm-hmm. When they were young and it was a scary, stormy night.
And it was both Hermes and Klaproth. And mm-hmm. look at them as young boys. They don't have the white skin.
Mm-hmm.
Their hair's got a color to it, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so as they get older, as they learn more, they become more and more like their clients.
Yeah.
So she would tell lots of stories. I like that Neil can just casually mention cool stories that he doesn't give you the full details of.
Mm-hmm.
There was one about a mortician who outwitted a giant and inherited a kingdom thereby. Another about a poor gravedigger who dug down to a magical land under the world and brought back a pale bride whose feet never quite touched the ground. There's a story about a coach full of apprentices and a master swept away from Lethargy by dark magics who took their refuge in a tavern where the price of haven was a tale.
Hmm.
So she told Klaproth and Hermes a story about the Innit World's End.
Mm-hmm.
And now Klaproth is in the Innit World's End.
Yeah.
Yeah. Telling stories.
And he's in the story that is being told.
I know. Yeah. He's in both stories. He's yes. in the story. Yeah. Klaproth everywhere.
So when she was a young apprentice,
mm-hmm.
she broke a vial. She freaked out, thought that she was going to get in huge trouble, and she ran away through the catacombs and wasn't paying attention. And she ended up in this super mysterious room.
Mm-hmm.
Six silver cerements hanging in that room, shining in the darkness, and a huge book locked closed on a lectern.
And a voice said to her, "Which of them is dead?"
Am I supposed to recognize the writing in that?
The "which of them is dead" writing?
Yeah. Is
nope.
it supposed to be a character I recognize?
Not necessarily.
I saw it and I was like, is this like the way that one of the Endless's speech bubbles are written and I'm just forgetting?
No, this is not one of the Endless.
Okay.
But remember in the previous story, when the Endless showed up, they came for her cerements and for the books of ritual, which are in your keeping, right? Mm-hmm. And in this room, six silver cerements hanging in the room, shining in the darkness, and a huge book locked closed on a lectern. She's found the storage place for the Endless's funeral rites.
Ah.
And so there's something in that room, right, saying which of them is dead, which of the Endless is dead. So this is just some kind of spirit or, I don't know, magic spell that is basically there to serve the purpose of dealing with this burial.
Okay.
Of this thing. Yeah.
That makes sense then.
Mm-hmm. And she tells the truth. And it says, "Go away, leave me alone." She's like, "I'm scared." And it uses its magic and fixes the flask. And it says, "Get out of here." And she questions it, which is the wrong thing to do, I guess.
And it withers her hand.
Yeah, here's proof. Wither. Yeah, now I have a cool hand.
And she keeps looking for the room through her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Never finds it until close to her death. When she felt herself dying, she lit a brand and made us escort her to the entrance to the catacombs mm-hmm. to hunt once more for her room. She walked inside and bade us wait for her at the entrance.
Mm.
We waited there for a day and a night, Klaproth and I, and in the end we heard a shrill scream and Mistress Veltis stumbled out into the daylight. And you can see both of her hands are back.
Yep. And if anyone else noticed that her right hand was whole again, well, they said nothing.
And that is Because the third thing we take away is that it leaves a stain, but eventually it disappears. The withered hand is the blood stain that eventually disappears before her death.
Sure.
In time, that will be gone too.
Mm-hmm.
The rain will wash it away.
Sure.
Called it.
And then they say, hey, Petrifax, you want to tell a story? And he's like, oh man, I don't have any stories. I'm just a boring first level dude. I haven't done any adventures yet. And I haven't heard any.
There was only three things to take away from this, and they already claimed all three. And he doesn't have any stories. Even later when he tells stories, he tells other people's stories.
Well, that's what a lot of these people are doing, right? This is a Mistress Velta story, and this is a destruction story.
Oh, yeah, and even the...
Mig?
Mig is just telling his grandfather's story.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
I mean, that's how stories work, right? Not everybody has to be an author of a story.
Mm.
You can tell a story you've heard, and that's fine.
Mm.
Klaproth has no stories. So he says, no, I need to do something. And he's also said he daydreams a lot, wishes he could travel. And we heard one little thing of once every few generations, we send one of ours out to learn about the world.
Yeah.
And so Petrifax is excited about that. I think that's kind of what he wants to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Petrifax is about to spill the beans about some secret Letharge stuff, apparently. And Klaproth tells him to shut up. In a cool, you know...
Hold your tongue.
Ceremonial way. Petrifax, you have the key to the city?
Yes, master.
What is its virtue?
To open and shut, to shut and to open.
Where do you keep it?
In an ivory box between my tongue and my teeth and within my heart where all my secrets are kept.
How long is the chain to the key?
As long as from my tongue to my heart.
There are strangers present. You will hush now.
Hmm.
And then Brant says something that I think a lot of people while reading this probably postulate about the Inn at World's End.
Mm.
Which is, oh, are they all dead? Is that what's World's End? Is this where you go when you're dead?
Mm-hmm.
And... he says, I figured it out. We're all dead. We're all dead. That's why we're here in Klaproth.
Young man, if you were dead, I think I would know. I have some experience in these matters.
Well, does anyone have a better explanation?
Actually, yes. I do.
Smash cut. That's the end of this one.
Boom, boom.
Most people are probably reading this in the trade paperback so they can just go to the next page, but that's where the comic actually ended.
Yeah.
With a total cliffhanger of a what's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, we know it's the inn at the world's end. This is where when worlds end, this is an inn that pops up and people hang out in for a while.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's cerements. The cerements being, I mentioned this last episode. I don't think I mentioned it this one. That is something you would wrap the body in.
Oh, right?
It's shroud. The burial shroud is called a cerement.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So what do you think of this one? We got, I think, 6 stories out of this?
Yeah, it was very many stories. Mm-hmm. Very, very many stories. I liked it. I liked that on what ended up being my third reading, because by the time we do this podcast, when we record, I've sat down and read it through twice before we do it. And so on my third time through, I figured out the 3 takeaway things with the 3 stories. And if you, the listener, think that I was dead wrong about that, feel free to come to the Facebook page and tell me how wrong I am. Or, I actually do read it.
Or tell Sasha how much you love what they do. Because we like to hear that stuff. It's really nice. And also tell all your friends.
Yes.
And back us on Patreon.
Ooh.
And tell your friends to back us on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we want for Christmas.
That is the best Christmas gift, is if you were just to force all of your friends and family.
Yeah.
Buy your friends and family a copy of The Sandman.
Ooh. And then point them at us. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice thing to
and
do.
Tell them with the money they saved, they should back The Dreaming.
Yeah.
The next issue is called World's End.
What? Well, how am I supposed to guess what happens in that one?
Well,
it's just the name of the whole book.
Yeah. But why do you think that it's finally being called
World's End? Oh, because it's the final one.
It is the final one.
It's the ender.
I mean, that's a good guess.
My guess of what happens is they all leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what happens while they're leaving? Anything happen? Is there any, what's going to go on? More stories? More stories about what? Something not a story? Is there going to be a world ending?
Well, that a lady who said that she knew what was going on mm-hmm. is going to actually tell them what's going on in some way.
Oh, okay. So that'll be, and she'll tell the story of that?
And that's how the thing will end. World's end will come to an end. The people who are at the world's end will leave.
Yeah.
Or something. They'll find there's bed bugs and they'll all be like, we're out of here.
Okay, bed bugs. I guess we'll have to find out next episode.
You've been dreaming of The Sandman, Issue 55, World's End, Chapter 5, Cerements. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you tell your friends about us. Our theme song is Onerai by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Sasha Smulders. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.